This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our panel today talked about the truth about taxes. The panelists included Lawrence Massal, head of the Civic Federation, Fran Spielman, the Sun-Times reporter, the dean of reporters at City Hall, and Hal Dardick, who covers City Hall and the county for the Chicago Tribune. Bottom line, no end in sight. Taxes will be going up. All of the speakers gave Mayor Emanuel credit for bringing some stabilization to a very unstable situation. Tax increases at the state level, the local level, coming pension funding will all lead to increased taxes beginning in 2020. The speakers agreed that the city must come up with about $865 million in new revenues to address the issues that are coming up. There is no funding mechanism yet. The CPS bond ratings are at junk status. County government will need more money to fulfill its mandates, and the effect of the Obamacare repeal is uncertain at this time. The state of Illinois has a backlog of $10 million in unpaid bills, and the question is, where are we going to get the money to address these questions? We simply cannot borrow any more money, was the conclusion of the three panelists. Economic liabilities that the governments face, which means the taxpayers, will require certain structural changes. How long will people stick around to pay up is a very good question.
We'll begin by asking our three panelists to make a short statement about 3 minutes about the truth about taxes. So, Hal, I guess you're the first one.
All right, so I get to steal their thunder.
Absolutely.
All right. As you all know, there's been a lot of tax increases in the city, the county, the state in the last 4 or 5 years. This year, since it starts with 2018, there's the last of the $543 million property tax increase to fund police and fire pensions was phased in, and you'll be feeling that in your 2018 property tax bill. Another $224.5 million in the CPS levy increase, mostly to go to pensions in that case also. So what happens is the property taxes continue to rise on the homes. Over the last 5 years or so, if you put all of that together, you're looking at a tax increase with not just the property taxes, but also with the new garbage hauling fees that are on your water bills, the water taxes, all of that. You're looking at a tax increase of over $1,800 just for the city and CPS alone. Of course, you can't look at that in a vacuum. You have the 33 or 32% increase in the state income tax, which comes on top of that. So that, of course, is adding hundreds or thousands of dollars to people's tax bills, too. And then you have the federal tax bill, which is harder to gauge because it'll depend on how much in state and local taxes you're paying. But if you're paying more than $10,000 in state and local taxes, you could very well see an increase there. So there's been a huge increase just over the last 5 years. And that's, you know, sort of you got to include the 1% increase also in the county sales tax, which Tony Preckwinkle restored, which is much harder to gauge on an individual basis. But that's what has happened. Now, all of that sounds like really horrible news, but in part, I would say some of it's good news. The city's paying $800 million more a year into the pension funds than it was before. It's ending the practice of scoop and toss, which is basically borrowing to pay off old borrowing and a much higher cost and putting a burden on future generations. You're looking at more money going into the Chicago teachers' pension fund. You're looking at the end of gimmicks under this mayor as compared to the previous one, and the most infamous of which was the selling of the Chicago's parking meters, which was ended up being sort of a short-sighted way to pay bills and hid the true nature of the problems that were facing the city. So in the county, the 1% sales tax has been used to it's kind of impressive what Tony Preckwinkle's doing with the pension funds over at the county. You've got a plan. If the returns on investment are right, you're going to see in 30 years you're going to see that pension fund 100% funded. Not the state, the city, nobody else can claim that kind of a plan. The overall debt is down. The size of the government is shrunk. So that's sort of the good news. In the state, it's harder to find good news at the state level. I suppose they started to pay that backlog of bills, which was growing larger after a two-year stalemate with the budget process. And one little caveat about all that, too, is, and it's sort of cold comfort, I think, to people, but when you look at the property taxes in the city, which have shot up by more than $1 billion between CPS and the city over the last 7 years, you're still seeing a property tax rate that city taxpayers are paying that are far lower than the vast majority of suburbs. Now, that was sort of the little bit of good news I can squeeze out of that. Now for the bad news, and this sort of goes to, I think, what this forum is focused on. According to the city's own projections, between in 3 years, starting with 2020, the pension payments that are going to have to go to the four pension funds for the city are going to increase by $864 million. So that's more than we've already seen the increase over the past 4 years as Mayor Rahm Emanuel has tried to address this issue. We don't have a funding mechanism for that yet, although property taxes are the most likely culprit. CPS, it's got a balanced budget for this year, and they're getting a lot more state funding, and it's the first time in years that they really have a balanced budget. But you're going to see the cost there grow by hundreds of millions of dollars more at a steady pace in the decades to come and return to crises levels. They still have all of their bond ratings are junk status. And with the county, as you saw with the repeal and the huge backlash against the pop tax, they believe they need more revenue as costs continue to increase. And the one variable there that could just throw everything in disarray, they just repealed the mandate on Obamacare. We'll see how that plays out. But if Obamacare is repealed, the county is just going to owe hundreds and hundreds of millions more dollars a year to fund the public health system. And the state still has a $10 billion backlog in unpaid bills and more than $100 billion in pensions. So that's the bad news there, and that's a bit worse than any other state in the nation. So the upshot of all that is that you're going to see, conveniently, starting in 2020 with the city, after the next city elections, you're going to see some sort of property tax increase or tax increase. May not be property. That's the easiest or most solid way to increase taxes. So they're going to continue to rise. You're going to see more fiscal crises at CPS because really we've just gotten over a bump there. And there's the Obamacare issue looming, and the state may very well need more revenue if it's really going to address the backlog of bills and provide more funding for schools, which will probably be necessary.
Thank you, Hal. Our next speaker will be Franz Spielman, who may very well be the senior journalist assigned to cover politics in the city of Chicago. She has been covering and analyzing Chicago's mayors and city government since Richard J. Daley. She has covered mayors Blandick, Byrne, Washington, Sawyer, Richard M. Daley, and now Rahm Emanuel. Fran, thanks for joining us. Your observations.
Well, let me say first, thanks, everybody, not for being glued to your tablets and computers and phones for the State of the State message and for choosing me instead and the rest of us here.
They chose you.
I have to say, when I heard about the title of this panel, The Truth About Taxes, I had to think about the courtroom drama dialogue in A Few Good Men when Tom Cruise says, "I want the truth," and Jack Nicholson says, "You can't handle the truth." The fact is, if you really want the truth, and you're not going to blame the messenger, the truth about taxes is they're going up. No end in sight. That's it. It's a situation where we all know how we got here. I mean, the city council just passed a budget with a telephone tax increase, an increase in ride-hailing fees, large venue amusements, and previously baked in increases on property and water and sewer bills. And that was called an easy vote for aldermen. That was an easy vote. Part of easy was the fact that the attention was diverted to what Preckwinkle was doing with the soda tax that was now repealed. We all know how we got here. Mayor Daley had an aversion to raising property taxes. I think he did it twice in 22 years. I think, and as a matter of fact, he once gave away money that was supposed to go to pensions to fund a pre-election property tax increase. People don't remember that, but at the time, the pension funds were flush with cash. I think they were at 90% funding, and so the unions went along with it. But that set the stage for the decline that we've seen. The mayor, Mayor Daley, did appoint, to his credit, a pension commission. But they didn't do anything. They had a report. They talked about the magnitude of the problem, that it was about to explode. He forbade them pretty much from talking about what the solution was, from talking about property taxes. And then he retired and left the whole bombshell in Mayor Emanuel's lap. Property taxes remained, as Hal mentioned, unrealistically low in Chicago still, even with the doubling of property taxes. You don't pay the same property tax that you do in the suburb for the same house. So people in Chicago have had it great, and they've come to expect it, and they need it because people are on fixed incomes now, and it makes it all the more difficult for people to accept what is going on now. The House of Cards was bound to come down. It sort of reminded me of the setup that Jane Byrne inherited after Richard J. Daley, where the school board collapsed and the CTA collapsed, and she had to rescue everything, and she had a firefighter strike and a CTA strike within months of taking office. It was a House of Cards. It came crashing down in Emanuel's lap. He knew it was going to be bad. I think it probably is worse than he thought. He didn't help the situation because he put off and saw peddled the pension crisis for his first term. He says that it was because he needed to show the public that he was doing economies and cutting costs. He also put through a water and sewer doubling to rebuild that infrastructure. He did go down to Springfield to give one big speech on pensions, but he didn't do anything about it. And after the election, he lowered the boom. Now we have dedicated funding sources for all four pension funds, and that is a big accomplishment. We have property for police and fire with that $543 million increase. We have the water and sewer tax for the municipal fund, which is the biggest. And we have two telephone taxes for the laborers' pension fund. But as Hal said, there's going to be this cliff that after you get up to the ramp up, the five-year ramp up, then the city has to stay on a road and is committed to staying on a road to 90% funding. In order to do that, you have this $860-some-odd million gap. And so I dare say you're not going to hear anything about the solutions to that until after the election. We'll see that soft-pedaled, and then you know what? They'll lower the boom again after the election, whoever the new mayor is. And this is all on top of really a tsunami of increases that Emanuel has already proposed. The garbage fee, $9.50 a month, that needs to go up because we're only covering 25% of sanitation costs. The 7-cent bag tax, numerous parking taxes, hotel and amusement tax increases, the water and sewer fees that doubled, city sticker fees that are now on that were raised and are on an annual climb, booting and towing fees, and all those red light and speed cameras that everybody loves to hate. So there isn't any end in sight. And now we have some other progress that's been made. The mayor recently signed a trade union contract that has some significant gains. He's got increases in employee contributions. He has some reforms that will yield the city something like $12.5 million, I think, or maybe a little more than that by the fifth year. But the cost of that contract is $57.8 million in the fifth year. And if you translate those gains to all the other unions, then it's $250 million. Where's that money going to come from? And if you look at some of the reforms, although they are progress, they are, again, comparatively to those of us in the private sector and what we contribute to health insurance, very small. So then you have the other red flags. You've got the crushing debt of the city of Chicago still, 12% of city spending, $821 million a year going to debt service. We have a steady parade of legal settlements that is not going to stop. The mayor has this sales tax securitization thing where he is isolating sales taxes into a fund and dedicating that money to paying off the bonds, that those bonds are rated more highly because the investors are protected from any city bankruptcy. But he's counting on $94 million in savings this year and next from that, and he's spending the money. Then you also have the cost of the two-year hiring surge for the police officers. Police officers are hired at a lower rate, but their salaries escalate very, very fast. How are we going to pay for that? Or are we going to, and maybe a consent decree will ask the city to pay for even more police officers or more training. Where is that money going to come from? And then you also have the financial quicksand that the city has stepped into by assuming even more responsibility for the CTA and for the schools. The mayor has committed to spending $80 million a year for security for the schools, for after-school programs, and so on, safe passage. That's going to escalate. And now that he's done it, he can't pull it back. So that's ad nauseum. That's going to continue. And where is that money going to come from? So these are precedents. The bottom line is there are alligators all around ready to bite us. And, you know, during the end of Daley's term, I used to say, God help the next mayor of Chicago. I should have said, God help the taxpayers, too.
Thank you, Fran.
Thought I was gloomy.
It's hard to believe that she began her career as a sports reporter, covering football, basketball, and tennis for the Daily Northwestern, and had an award-winning sports program on Channel 11. Okay. Lawrence, the Civic Federation.
Now for the happy news about how. Everything that Fran and Hal have said is true and accurate. The city is facing enormous financial challenges. Today, and I want to thank Jay and the City Club for having us here today. Thank all of you for coming. You are missing the State of the State address. This could be the cost of the state of the state to the city of Chicago, because the state of the state of Illinois is one that drives a lot of the financial challenges of the city of Chicago. We have seen very significant tax increases in Chicago, and quite candidly, the public is at a point where their acceptance for more taxes to get less services or to pay off old debt seems to be waning. I think what we saw with the sugary beverage tax was just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the animosity there is amongst much of the public for how many different things we can find to tax. We've run out of the easy answers in the city of Chicago. The easiest answer for a long time was to borrow or to ignore our liabilities. That's what we did with our pensions. We let them, with complicity of the state of Illinois and the city council and the Chicago Public Schools, we failed to recognize the cost of those programs. We added benefits, the state statutorily established benefits that now we really need to unwind, not the least of which is for the state of Illinois, the 3% compounded automatic increase that is responsible for about 30% or more of the $130 billion in unfunded pension liability just for the state. It's a significant portion of the approximately $30 billion that the city of Chicago and our overlapping governments have. You may recall that about 4 years ago, the legislature passed legislation to attempt to deal with that. It was found by our elected Supreme Court not to be constitutional. We believe at the Civic Federation that has to be revisited, a constitutional amendment that allows the General Assembly to make changes or to correct earlier mistakes is something that most other states would allow. In terms of the city's finances, the city and the whole state could actually take a breath earlier this year or last fall when the state created the framework for a state budget. But it wasn't a panacea. It was created over with the override of the governor's veto. It raised the income tax up to 4.95%, but it did not balance, right? One of the key components, just and obvious, was the selling of the James R. Thompson Center. And there's about $300 million that's expected net from the Thompson Center sale. So far, there's been very little interest in that building for those kind of prices. That means that the state doesn't have enough money to pay its bills. The state borrowed $6 billion. And I think it's important for everyone to just absorb that number, right? Because the billions in borrowing and the billions in underfunding start to all roll together at a certain point. But Illinois borrowed $6 billion, and it used it to pay off a portion of its unpaid bills. And even though the state got a relatively good interest rate of under about 4% for that borrowing, and even though it was able to leverage that to draw about $8.7 billion in unpaid bills that the state would have paid under state statutes between 9 and 12%, we still borrowed money that we have to take the next 12 years to pay off for our operating side. And it seems to be this incessant appetite to try to figure out who we can borrow or who we can blame to pay for our past mistakes. We are stuck with enormous liabilities on the pension side that require structural change. Taxes, as both Hal and Fran have said, are likely to go up. The question is how high they will have to rise and how long people will stick around to pay those increased taxes if we don't stabilize our government, if we don't deliver the type of services that are needed in order to continue to attract people to the city. The city of Chicago has a downtown boom going on, and it's being driven by international forces of young people, especially talented business professionals wanting to live in the core city. We're getting some advantage from that in terms of population and business growth. We are not getting what we should compared because of the uncertainty of the state, because of the state financial pressure that is pushing down on the city of Chicago. The two biggest areas after pensions that are just so obvious are we have to stop borrowing for operating, and that includes the city of Chicago, which Fran pointed out, continues to have very large settlements that instead of being paid out of operating revenue are borrowed, which doubles and sometimes triples the cost of that settlement. And we have to recognize a limitation of how big our governments can be and how many units of government we can have. We have more units of government, more pension funds than any other state, more local governments duplicating and overlapping. We can't afford it. It's time for Illinois to get serious. And if we want to be serious about property tax relief, you have to be serious about consolidating the number of school districts we have. In many communities, we have multiple school districts feeding the same student population. In other communities in downstate Illinois, we have districts that prop up a single school that don't have enough students. We have a population problem in the Chicago Public Schools. The population of students going forward is going to continue to drop. The cost at the Chicago Public Schools continue to rise. That has to be corrected. we need a lot more management improvement. I think Mayor Emanuel deserves, as both of you pointed to, he deserves credit for bringing some stability to the city of Chicago, addressing the pension system, but we're going to hit a very big roadblock in 2020 with these pension funds if something else isn't done. The amount of money they need in order for them not to run out of money shortly thereafter is very significant. Thank you.
Thank you, Lawrence. Thank you, Hal. And thank you, Fran. Okay. You want the truth, huh? I think we got it. We have a number of questions from people in the audience, and if anyone else has a question, just hold it up. Alex or Amanda from our staff will pick them up. This is from Ed Bachrock. If the city wants to end scoop and toss or continuous debt renewal, won't it have to begin paying down the general obligation debt? Should this debt amortization go into the city budget? Who would like to address that?
So a couple of things. Scoop and toss, and I think Hal actually mentioned it. The mayor has pledged that this year the city of Chicago was ending the practice of scoop and toss. That's by which we keep pushing the debt out rather than paying the principal on it. That has a compounding impact on the cost of any borrowing, because the useful life of what is generally purchased with capital or with bond funds is of a limited duration, usually matched up with the bonds. When you keep pushing it out forward, you're raising the cost of the government. You're making a short-term budgetary relief with long-term financial consequences. In terms of shifting the debt onto the to the city finances, I assume what you're saying is some of the other debt related to the public schools or that also have unfortunately used scoop and toss. The city carries its general obligation debt on its balance sheet, so they will continue to do that. What you want to watch when the city issues debt is whether it's issuing taxable or non-taxable debt. Oftentimes, if it's taxable, then that there is either an arbitrage playing going on, or there is something else that is pushing the debt forward.
City budget financial officials maintain that they'll have the funding not to do the scoop and toss in the future. I think that remains to be seen. You know, what else has to give? Where would new revenue come from? Because in how exactly is the debt burden structured? There is a slight decrease in the overall debt payments coming up, but then I think they rise again. So there's a lot of planning that goes into that. A lot of it depends on the health of the economy, too. But it's a good question, because it does create a lot more stress on the city to pay its everyday bills.
Fran, do you want to comment at all on this question? If not, you could take the next question.
I'll take the next
question. Okay. Good.
Door number two.
This is from door number two, as Lawrence said. This is from John Holden. The question is, percentage-wise, how much do you estimate taxes would have to go up for Chicagoans to fully fund Chicago, Cook County, and CPS pension funds?
Well, a lot more than they would want to.
It would be so bad that people would flee. I mean, you're talking about keeping each of these funds on a ramp up to 90% funding for 40 years. I mean, it's an unbelievable amount of money. I mean, if you were to do that right away instead of doing it over 40 years, there's no way that anyone could afford to live here. I don't know what the question means. I mean, is he saying that we should pay it off right now and get to 90% funding immediately? That's impossible.
Okay.
The county is on a trajectory with the revenue it has to pay off their pension fund in about 28 more years. So they're a different. The state and the city, no. And their CPS, not even close.
No.
Okay.
I would just add... to that, it's important to recognize that with these pension funds, all of them, having significant unfunded liabilities, The challenge is where you raise, if you're going to be able to continue to raise taxes to stay on these ramps or to follow the actuarial required contribution and still maintain the other basic services of government. The Chicago Police, and as an example, and Fran pointed it out, the demands of policing and new classes of policemen coming in is very significant. It's least significant financially in the first year, but as the years go forward, it gets much and more. It has much and much larger of an impact. We believe that fixing the state and the local pension funds and addressing, you know, the reality, which is that if we owe $30 billion in the city of Chicago to our overlapping pension funds, we owe $130 billion to the state, we need to come up with an answer that addresses that significantly for both if you just do one. That's why we think a constitutional amendment that allows for the sharing and not to take away benefits from people or the basic pension security, but the 3% compounded automatic increase that occurs in all of the state employees and some of the municipal employees is more generous than you see in any other state. And it's one that just doesn't make sense in terms of stabilizing these governments.
Okay, we have a couple of questions here. I think you alluded to it on consolidation. Jane Grover and Peter Hyland want to know, what do you perceive as the barriers to local government consolidation? And are there any current meaningful initiatives toward this?
Fiefdoms. Nobody wants to give up their fiefdom. Contracts, jobs. I mean, everybody's going to fight for their turf. Nobody wants to give it up. I mean, it's a real uphill battle, and that goes for the pension funds too. I mean, each one of them wants to be separate so that they can deal with their separate issues. But if they share costs and they, you know, if they consolidate, there's a lot of savings to be had. But everybody, nobody want, you know, not in my house, not, you know, so it's going to be tough.
Certainly, with the state of Illinois having more units of government than any other state, more than twice any other state, the evidence from an objective standpoint is quite obvious that you need to consolidate. Really, it's inertia more than anything else. And it's also a lack of awareness about that how we've done things historically is the only way we can do things going forward. It's a failure, really, of the state to modernize. Even because I think if you look at the state of Illinois and you look at the city of Chicago, we have raised taxes. We have seen, you know, the public be asked to give more and more, but we have not seen the governments change significantly in how they deliver those services in an efficient way. Most of the problems are tied up in state statutes that the city of Chicago does not have the authority to even increase the amount it contributes to its pensions, let alone consolidate them without the state of Illinois' approval. With the federal tax law changes, it's something people should be paying attention. Probably most of you are aware that under the new tax law, only $10,000 of your local and state taxes will be deductible from your federal income tax. In Chicago, and definitely in the suburbs and around it, it is not unusual for residential taxpayers to pay more than $10,000 in their property taxes alone. And if you put a 5% or a 4.95% income tax on top of that, they're quickly going to surpass that. We should be looking at that as an incentive to get people to recognize consolidation has worked in other states. Other states, well-run states, don't have anywhere near the number of governments and especially don't have the number of pension funds that we have. There's an incentive to bring down that operating cost.
But look how hard it was to even switch from ward by ward to grid garbage. To do a grid system. It was a tough political battle that the mayor had to fight. But if that was tough, can you imagine how tough it would be to eliminate whole units of government?
You raise a great point. Which of the citizens were fighting against the grid system? Maybe the elected officials were fighting against the grid system, but no citizen was saying it's important to me that that my garbage or my recycling be picked up by a particular ward superintendent. They were basically saying they were sitting it out while the political leaders were saying we can't deliver that. If you look at how utilities are delivered in this state, they're not delivered on a political boundary system. They're based on where the people are. That's the modern delivery of government services. But you're right. There is a lot of political resistance. There's not a big cash incentive at the end for the government, but from a long-term financial stability standpoint, it's the obvious way that we have to go forward.
Hal?
These governments, the myriad of them and the plethora of them, they fuel the political system. The Democrats, Republicans both use it. I think the best example I can use of that is back maybe 15 years ago, they tried to start an initiative at the Citizen Advocacy Center to get rid of township governments in DuPage County. And they went to referendum, but the Republicans in DuPage County fought tooth and nail against it because the township governments not only provided jobs to people, but it was a political training ground for the people that were rising in politics, and it was a political retirement ground for the people that were trying to slow down a little bit, and the retirement was imminent. So they managed to defeat that. They came up with all – they even – they went and started doing things, providing senior services, things that aren't mandated for township government. All of those duties were super easily absorbed into municipal and county government and probably delivered more efficiently at far lower cost. But they fought this because it's part of their political turf. It's part of the way that they operate. The political parties have a vested interest in maintaining lots of governments.
Okay, thank you. Last night, President Trump, in his State of the Union, talked about a new federal infrastructure program that would require local matching funds. Where's this money going to come from?
Well, I mean, that was the question last Friday when the mayor announced the route for the Red Line extension to 130th Street. Where is the money going to come from for a $2.3 billion project? The city established a very dangerous precedent in the Red Line project by creating a transit TIF on the north side. And it was the first time that the city was going to go it alone and not have state and federal matching funds, but to generate those funds locally. And it was a scary proposition. It was done in a rush to try to take advantage of $1 billion in the waning days of the Obama administration. But the question is, can you do that on the south side? Can you do that even if you did create a transit TIF on that side of town? Would there be enough of an increment to pay for this project that is so desperately needed in a transit desert to give that part of the city rapid transit service instead of just buses? It is going to be interesting to see where the city is going to come up with these matching funds. The state of Illinois hasn't had a capital plan in 9 years. They haven't raised gas taxes. The state desperately needs a capital plan. The federal government has got to be a partner as well. Trump is saying in some vague notion that everything has to be dollar for dollar. And in the midst of all this other crush of burden that we all talked about for pensions and everything, where is the match locally going to come from? The mayor started a precedent by raising ride-sharing fees. And there's some wisdom to that because ride-sharing is stealing from mass transit. People at night on weekends are not taking the train or the bus. They'd rather hop in an Uber or a Lyft. So maybe they should pay some of it to pay for mass transit because they're siphoning money from mass transit. But can he build on that fee and keep raising it higher and higher? Will those companies tolerate it? Can there be a national ride-sharing fee? I don't know, but it'll be interesting to see where that local match is going to come from.
Okay. Thank you. You've painted a pretty bleak future for those of us here. And we're not even to 2020 yet. And it's hard to have one of these discussions without mentioning Amazon and companies like Amazon. They're asking for a lot of enticements that will cost a lot of money. Where is this money going to come from if we are going to be a serious contender for the Amazons?
Well, there are existing programs that I think they plan on tapping, TIF districts, which, of course, have their own controversy. There is the state EDGE tax credit which, you know, makes people wonder, well, why would you have to give Amazon, such a healthy company, a break on paying income taxes? A number of things that already exist in the infrastructure of local government to pay for what they're offering them. The offering here, interestingly, I think, you know, $2 billion or so isn't nearly as much as New Jersey's offered, like $8 billion or something. So hopefully they don't keep upping the ante and give away the house on that in the effort to get it. But there are ways, and you can question the wisdom that these things have been built into government.
I think both Amazon and Fran's comments about public transit and infrastructure are very intertwined. We, in order to attract not just Amazon, but McDonald's, ADM, Motorola Solutions, all the companies that have moved their headquarters to Chicago and that we continue want to be here, you have to be delivering services that those employees and those companies want in public transit, walkability, the amenities that we have in the along the river and in the Central Loop area are exactly what they want. But we don't have right now a plan for how to maintain and improve our transit. The President of the United States announcing that it's going to be locally funded, or it's going to require enormous local match from an ill-defined pot, is one that should worry all of us. Illinois, as Fran pointed out, has not had a major infrastructure program that was funded using traditional means of a gas tax, you know, in over two decades. The state is in bad financial shape, but that doesn't mean we can afford to stop investing in our infrastructure, in our capital. Transit, in particular, is one that we're very vulnerable. The CTA has seen a consistent drop in ridership the last couple of years. It may be tied to ride sharing. It may be tied to other factors in terms of the population. The CTA loses money when people don't ride because they don't pay at the fare box, but they also lose on the federal formula, which basically recognizes the number of people that are traveling, and you get an added bonus from the federal formulas for which we rely on. It was a very big decision that went without a lot of discussion to start to fund our public transit, the rebuilding of the Red Line, through property taxes. That's what a tax increment financing district is. It's a tax increase spread over a district. We had never done that before. It did allow us to secure $1 billion that we would not be able to have gotten out of the federal government from the TIFIA loans. But the same reason people are concerned about their property taxes, the same reason there are plenty of bills in Springfield, and there will be again this year, saying they're going to freeze property taxes, goes right at the heart of whether you can fund these things locally only on the property taxes. It's not likely. We have a challenge in recognizing we have a declining population in our state. We have challenges in the city of Chicago with maintaining population, but we still have to maintain the infrastructure necessary to attract and retain the companies and the people that want to work in those companies.
Okay. So from what you said here, I guess we shouldn't expect to see a meaningful introduction of legislation, whatever, to raise the state taxes on gasoline.
Well, that's what the political status quo would be, to basically, we're in a crisis, so let's wait and see what happens. The hope would be that the state would recognize that they have severe infrastructure needs. The Illinois Secretary of Transportation has estimated that we need over $1 billion a year just to maintain in safe condition the existing infrastructure of the state of Illinois. That's not any enhancements or rebuilds. We have to, you know, there's lots of great ideas about futuristic driverless cars and electric cars and, you know, the impact that that's going to have on transit funding and transportation funding. Unfortunately, it's not positive in terms of the financial standpoint. While we're waiting for someone to come up with a better, perfect answer, we could have a plan that says over the next 5 years, we are going to fund our capital needs according to this plan. The Civic Federation feels strongly that the state of Illinois gets into its biggest problems, as do local governments, when it operates without a plan, when it basically says it's going to spend money without a comprehensive plan for how it's going to prioritize the expenditures from that borrowing.
It'll be interesting also to see who bids for the O'Hare Express project that Mayor Emanuel wants to fund without taxpayer dollars. You know, will Elon Musk jump into that competition? What kind of a system is it? They want to fund that with high fares. Will people pay for an average train ride that's just going to be express with a luggage rack and maybe a reserve seat? Or does it have to be some kind of Jetsons-like gee whiz technology that it has a wow factor that would get people to pay $40 a ride for something that they could pay maybe, I don't know, half of that for an Uber? So it'll be interesting to see if that model even works. The mayor once upon a time touted his infrastructure trust as this groundbreaking vehicle to attract private investment that and fund projects that the city needed but couldn't afford to do on their own. That was a bust, and it hasn't really done anything except become kind of a glorified public building commission. So we've seen some fits and starts on that.
Okay, we have time for perhaps two last questions. This is from a public official, Joe Moore, the alderman of the 49th Ward. Joe would like to know, if any of you three were mayor, how would you address the pension shortfall in 2020?
Ah. Lots of prayer. I
think the city needs a new revenue stream and something new and different that is not going back to the same people over and over and over again, whether it's a tax on services, whether it's a congestion fee, which is difficult to implement, I don't know. Whether it's something on ride sharing, I don't know. But I just think that if we keep hammering the same people over and over again, there's going to be an explosion. People just cannot handle it. It's particularly not people on fixed incomes who have only their homes.
I think there's three things that we would recommend to the mayor. One is there needs to be an education of both the public and the pensioners, right? We don't have economic security and certainty for a lot of people who are have performed valuable service to the city and now are at a time in their life when they should not have to worry about having a 30% or 25% funded pension that's in danger of running out of money. It's time to get serious about what's possible in that regard. Consolidation is easily possible from the city's standpoint. You could move the police and fire and laborers and municipal pension fund into the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund and have the objectivity of a state board that basically would make sure that you're adequately funding your pension and have repercussions when you don't. But in exchange for that, in addition, that we would be giving up some control related to the workers' comp decisions and other things that are run through our pension funds currently. But there will need to be likely new revenue. That new revenue won't come easy. There aren't people behind the tree that are waiting to pay the taxes for those of us who would like to have it avoided in Chicago. But you can limit the amount of those increases. We cannot afford to go forward into 2020 without a plan for how we're going to fund our pensions or how we're going to make sure that we have adequate resources to not see the city deteriorate even further. The city of Chicago is one of the few major cities in the United States that has a non-investment grade by a major rating agency. It's not something we're going to get out of or easily without a long-term plan. But the cost associated with being in such a precarious position affects all areas of government and related governments, because it means every time the city has to borrow, it pays a much higher premium than it needs to.
Well, one way to take part of the load off is a proposal by the Democrats, and you may have your misgivings about this, but if we went to a graduated income tax, it would raise a lot more revenue for the state, which could help with school funding. So it would take some of the load off of what we're facing at the school district. and free up more of the what the local taxpayers can bear in less progressive taxes to fund the pension funds. But it's hard to imagine that you could raise the property taxes as soon as 2021 by the amount that would be needed just to pay the police and fire pension. So I think Fran's got a good point that maybe there needs to look to some other revenue source. But the problem is how progressive those are and who can bear it and who can afford to flee it, frankly.
Okay. Now, we have someone here who wants to pay more taxes, by the way. This question, a very last question. There are people who are in the gig economy. They work multiple jobs that do not withhold taxes. They're labeled under self-employed, which often leads to payments that can be debilitating to these people. Any proposals or ideas to making paying taxes under self-employment easier? Do you want to wrestle with that?
It's a good question. I freelance for years, so I was self-employed, and you end up paying for a greater share of your taxes. It's harder to get health insurance. If you're not employed by a corporation, life is a lot more financially difficult. But I think the federal government could look at some way to maybe ameliorate the FICA payments that self-employed people have to make, or create an insurance pool that they could get into, because the health insurance is really the biggest cost that you face is when you're self-employed.
Okay. Lawrence, did you have something you wanted to say?
I would just add that, and I think Hal covered it, you know, most of the issues related to your taxes, especially the state of Illinois income tax, follows the federal model. So you're really looking at what the feds are providing. There are some new incentives in the federal tax law that will allow you to deduct more depending on if you set yourself up as a subchapter S corporation and basically are able to take a lot of the expenses related to it. But it really is, again, it's also educational, too, in terms of people understanding what the benefits of withholding sufficiently in order to pay your taxes so they don't shock you. I don't really see much at the local level that we can do to improve that.
And Fran, you could have the last word on this subject, if you'd like to.
I'm the subject.
Well, it's interesting that some of the gubernatorial candidates are talking about legalizing recreational marijuana and taxing it. And that may be with an eye toward the fact that the state and the city and everybody needs some new spigot of money. So we'll see about that and whether that would go over. That seems like a revolutionary change, but there's a reason why they're looking at that, at least.
Okay.
Yeah, the reason why they're looking at that is because they're looking for an easy answer
right.
to a complicated problem.
Right.
Legalization of marijuana in Colorado has not generated sufficient revenue to fully support the collection of the taxes and the enforcement of all the other residual challenges that it brings to law enforcement and other areas. I just have to say, you please avoid the easy answer where someone else is paying the taxes for the solution to our problem.
Well, we'll be addressing this subject at a future discussion, the subject of legalized marijuana, and can we get ours before Colorado takes all of it? Okay. Let's give a big round of applause to our panelists.